Okay, good evening, everyone. So this Shabbos is Parshas Vayechi. We conclude our reading of Sefer Bereishis. And what I want to discuss this evening is a question that was bothering me this week as I reviewed the Parsha. And that is, what at the end of the day was Yaakov's feelings towards Yosef? Did they change over time? We know when the whole story begins, the Torah is very explicit in describing the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef. Yisrael havas Yosef mikol banav. That Yisrael loved Yosef, seems like more than all his other sons. Kiven zekunim hulo, because he was on the surface, he was the child of. In his old age, that was born to him in his old age, Vasalok, so this pasim, he makes him this coat of many colors. And we generally understand this pasuk to referring to perhaps the special relationship that Yaakov had with Yosef, because Yosef, after all, was the child of Yaakov's beloved wife, Rachel. And therefore, he had this very strong bond with Yosef. And as I cited a couple weeks ago, the Netziv understands it a little differently. The Netziv suggests that Yosef, at this stage in Yaakov's life, spent the most time with his father. The other brothers were older already. Binyamin was very young. Yosef was the one who tended to his father. He was the one who was sort of always by his side. That's why he gives him this coat of many colors. It's a sort of a coat of dignity, of royalty, because he's going to be serving his father. And furthermore, Netziv suggests something very interesting. He says that Yaakov, of course, loved all his sons, and he recognized that each son had his own individual strength, which is something that clearly emerges in this week's Parsha in Vayechi when he gives the final brachos. He highlights the strengths and the weaknesses of each of his children. But what he saw unique within Yosef was Shira Bo Inyanim Ruchanim, Shiroi La'ava. He saw something very spiritual within Yosef that he was enamored by, and something that he was taken back by. There's something with his neshama, with his soul, that Yaakov was attracted to, that he saw something very special and beautiful about Yosef. And that was the unique relationship that he had with Yosef. And so what I wanted to do this evening is sort of talk about, well, how does that really emerge within Yosef? And does Yosef sort of live up to what his father perhaps hoped that he would? You know, whatever Yaakov perhaps dreamed that Yosef would become, does Yosef, in fact, does that happen? And the reason why I'm asking this question is because at the end of the day, and sort of coming back to what we discussed last week, in this week's Parsha, when it comes to Yaakov deciding who's going to be the future leader of his children, it's not Yosef, right? It's ultimately it's Yehuda, right? Yehuda is going to be the one who Yaakov explicitly says in the parsha of Gor Arye Yehuda that Lo Yasur Shevim Yehuda Mechokim Bein Raglav, right? That the scepter is not going to depart from Yehuda. You know, he has a lot of nice things to say about Yosef as well within the brachos. But clearly we know historically, right, the leadership of the Jewish people emerged from Yehuda and not from Yosef. And in fact, Yosef was the breakaway. Yosef ultimately, when the kingdom split after the death of Shlomo HaMelech, it was Ephraim, Yeravam, they were the ones who broke off, right? Not seemingly, that's not the ideal. And so, you know, so what happens with Yosef in this relationship between Yosef and Yaakov? So let's go back to the beginning of the Parsha. The beginning of Parsha is fascinating, and I think it raises a lot of very important questions. We're told, right, this is the end, the culmination of the entire book of Bereishis, the end of the period of the Avos, of our forefathers. Yaakov lives for 17 years in Egypt. Right? Interesting, 17 years after he went down with the family in last week's Parsha, he still lived another 17 years. He dies at the age of 147. And we're told by Yikrevu Yimei Yisrael Amos, as it's getting close to the end, he's getting older, the time is going to soon arrive, that he realizes he's not going to live that much longer. By Krell of Nol Yosef, he calls out to his brother, to his son Yosef. By Yomer Lo, and he says to Yosef, and he summons Yosef, if I have found favor in your eyes. And that expression is very troubling. If I have found favor in your eyes. You know, I looked up the Karkadansia. The first time that expression appears, it appears a few times in Bereishis. The first time is with Avram, with the travelers, right? The three angels who come. And he says, if I found favor in your eyes, right? Please don't pass. Stay with me. And so I saw Rav Hirsch ask the question, you know, a father doesn't say this to a child. If I found favor in your eyes, I'm the father, you're the son. So immediately there seems to be, something amiss, disconnect. Now the Netziv suggests, or I'm sorry, the Rav Hirsch suggests that the Yaakov made it a priority that during those 17 years in Egypt, he wasn't going to take advantage of the fact that his son was second in command and he never asked for favors. Here, though, he needed to ask him for a favor. He needed to ask him to bury him back in the Canaan in Israel. And therefore, he sort of begins the conversation with this expression of humility. But again, on the surface, it's a very troubling expression that Yaakov needs to say this to Yosef in terms of making a request. And then he tells him, I want you right. We know this is often, this is Avram uses with Eliezer, this expression, that you want someone to keep a promise. This is a way to place your hand by my thigh. Sisamadi chesed, emes, do for me kindness and truth. Don't bury me in Egypt. Right? Do not bury me in Egypt. Rather, I should lie with my fathers and you should take me out of Egypt. Bury me in my parents' burial plots. And Yaakov says, okay, whatever you want, Dad, no problem. And that's not enough for Yaakov. Yaakov said, no, promise me, swear to me, shavali. He shavalo, and he promised it, and he swore. And so, again, you see some sort of disconnect here between Yaakov and Yosef. And to the extent they need him to promise, to swear, And this is something that's very important for Yaakov, right? This idea of being buried back in Israel, he makes Yaakov, Yosef promise before he dies with all the sons around him. He once again emphasizes this to that he should be buried, tells him exactly where he wants to be buried, Maros HaMachpelah, which is in Hebron, where Avram and Yitzchak, right? But they're all buried. And then interestingly, at the end of the Parsha, Yosef himself, although not necessarily requesting to be buried in Maros HaMachpelah, also makes the request to his brothers that he shouldn't be ultimately should not be buried in Egypt. I'll come back to that in a moment. Okay, then the story continues, and we are told that the things get bad. Behold, your father. Yosef is told that your father is ill. He's not well. Rashi quotes a Medrash that there was Ephraim who shared the news. Ephraim, according to the Medrash, used to study Torah. Yosef was in the center of town. Yosef was in the palace. Yaakov was living in Goshen. So Ephraim would go back and forth learning with his grandfather. When he wasn't well, he told Yosef, his father, what was happening. So what does Yosef do? Yosef takes his two sons with him, Es Menashe Ves Ephraim. He takes Menashe and Ephraim. Yaakov is told, Vayomer Yinei Bincha Yosef Ba'ilacha, Yosef is here, Vayizchazek Yisrael Vayishev Al-Mita. And Yaakov, and Rashi says this is a sign of respect for royalty, even though it's his son, but nonetheless, he sits up for him. But, and then Yaakov gives a whole history lesson. And I think this is very significant. And I think this highlights some sort of concern that Yaakov has in terms of Yosef and his direction and the path that he's chosen for himself and perhaps for his children, as we'll see. Vayom Yaakov Yosef, Kel Shakai Nirai Lai Beluz Beretz Kedam Yevarchosi. Kel Shakai appeared to me. Who shit Kel Shakai? So we've seen this in the past as well. Kel Shakai is obviously the name for God, but it's the name of God that's used in Sefer Bereishis whenever God gives the ultimate bracha to Avram, then Yitzchak, and then Yaakov. The bracha of Zerav Aretz, as Rabbi Liebtag often says in his writings. The bracha of you're going to be this great nation, but this great nation that's going to develop and ultimately going to be settled in the land of Israel. And Yaakov is telling Yosef, this is who I am. This is my Mesorah. This is my tradition. That God appeared to me in Luz, right after I'd returned from the house of Lavan and encountered the angel of Esav and reunited with Esav. God appeared to me, Kel Shakai appeared to me. And he gave me this, right, this bracha, this great nation living in the land of Israel. And he says, right, you're going to increase mightily, and I'm going to give you Saaretz Azoz, this land. And then he says, V'yata now, Shnei Vanecha, Nodim Lecha, B'yat Mitzrayim, Avi'alech Mitzrayim Liheim. The two kids that were born to you, they're actually, they're mine. Right, Ephraim and Manasseh, Ruvain and Shimon, Nemuli. Ephraim and Manasseh are going to be like Ruvain and Shimon. And so the question is, so of course Ephraim and Manasseh now are going to be considered to be the part of the Shvatim, the tribes, right? Just like Ruvain and Shimon. And the question is why? Why is Ephraim and Manasseh, the grandchildren, going to be like Ruvain and Shimon? I don't know anyone who says this. I'm just throwing this out there. I just thought of this. But I wonder on some level if Ephraim and Manasseh are going to replace Reuven and Shimon. Like Reuven and Shimon sort of fall off. Reuven has several failures throughout the book of Bereishis. He's no longer considered to be really the Bechor, the firstborn with all that responsibility. Shimon sort of disappears, and Shimon we know starting with the story with Shechem, and then later in the Torah. With the several failures, with the Bnos Midyan, Shimon sort of, so on some levels, like Ephraim and Manasseh are taking, perhaps, or it's more than just saying that they're going to be tribes like Reuven and Shimon. But on some level, they're going to replace. Again, I don't know if anyone says that. I just thought of that. They're going to replace on some level Reuven and Shimon. But nonetheless, right, your sons, they're going to become part of the tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel. And anyone you have afterwards, any future children, they're yours. They're not going to be equal to my children. And then he famously tells him about Rachel, his mother, right? That Rachel died along the way, and I buried her there in Beit Lechem. And right, somehow the Mephorshim all sense that this is an issue of tension. Right, the fact that he has to mention this is, obviously Yosef is upset. You want me to bury you in the land of in Israel and in the Marsach Bela? What about mom? Right? My mother, you didn't do that. And why didn't you give her a proper burial like everyone else in the family? And so we know Chazal say that she was buried there for a reason when the Jews would go off into exile. But somehow, again, I'm just trying to demonstrate. There seems to be some sort of distance, tension. Between Yaakov and Yosef at this late stage in the game, at the end of Yaakov's life, there's like sort of like dancing back and forth between a distance, but also I'm grabbing your kids. Your kids are mine. I'm not losing them. They're going to be equal to the other children. And then the next thing is very strange. Vayar Yisrael Spnei Yosef. Yisrael sees the children of Yosef. By Yomer, Mi'elan, he says, who are these? I mean, who are they? He doesn't know that they're his grandchildren, right? He doesn't, and he just talked about them a second ago. Right? He just said Ephraim and Asher. Right? So who? By Yomer Yosef, so immediately Yosef says back to his father, no, but not him, they're my kids. I should know some little kid, but that God has given to me, right, in this, perhaps in this situation in Egypt. By Yomar, okay, so Yaakov says, Kachem na alive, right, so bring him close and I'll give him a bracha. Bnei Yisrael kavdu mizoken. Now we're told that Yaakov, he reached a stage in his life, he was hard, he had a hard time seeing, couldn't see so well. Boyucholiros, he couldn't see. So 1 second. It says a second ago he saw the boys. Fayar Yisrael Bnei Yosef. Now we're told Lo Yucholiros, he could not see. Like, can he see or can he not see? Vayagesho Samilov, he brings them close to him. Vayishak Lem, he kisses them, Echabek Lem, and he hugs them. What does this remind you of? So when I was reading through this, this reminds me of another story in Bereishis. Someone not being able to see, someone at the end of his life, right, bringing someone close, hugging and kissing. Does this remind you of Yitzchak with giving the bracha, you know, not knowing is it Yaakov or Esav? Seems like a repetition of the story. And again, whenever you see this in the Torah, I didn't see anyone who suggests this, but I'm sure there are those out there who make this connection. I think the Nativ sort of referenced this story that I saw. But clearly the Torah wants to make a connection here between those two stories. Now that previous story didn't go so well, right? That previous story is full of a lot of Yaakov's tricking his father Yitzchak because Rivka tells him to. Is he really deserving the bracha, not deserving the bracha? Right, and what was Yitzchak's intention? And so it seems like here Yaakov's sort of replaying this, and it's on his mind. Like he remembers what happened, what he did when his father was going to give a bracha. He remembers, and he says, it seems like he's intentionally replaying this. And the question is why. And so the story continues that Yisrael says to Yosef, right? Like I can't believe. I never thought I would see your face again, but Baruch Hashem, now I see you. Now you have children. I see my grandchildren, and what happens next? The Yosef bows down before his father. He takes both them. Right now, the position game. Right, that he takes them in he positions Ephraim to the. To the left of his father, Menashe the Bechor, the firstborn, to the right of his father, and now when Yaakov famously switches his hand, puts the right hand over Ephraim, who's the younger one, and the left hand over Menashe, who's the older one, and Yosef doesn't like this. And again, this is like seems like a repeat of your previous story, with. Favoring the younger one, Yaakov, over the older one, Esav. But again, Yitzchak wanted to do it the other way, right? Yitzchak wanted to favor the older one, Esav. Right? So here, Yosef, seemingly in cahoots with, like, similar to Yitzchak, wants to favor the older one, but Yaakov, similar to his mother, Rivka, favoring the younger one. Again, it's very interesting, right, to see this sort of play itself out again. Yaakov has a sensitivity to his mother's wisdom, right? That somehow, and that whatever she did back then, Yaakov senses that this needs to repeat itself at this point as well. Although the one major distinction between that story and this story is that in the previous story with Yitzchak and this bracha and the brachas, in theory, there was only one was going to get a bracha. Here, both are going to get a bracha, right? This question is which one is going to take priority. And Yosef, so he gives them the brava. Yivarach has Yosef, a Yomar, Lokim Ashi, Salahu, Vosayef, and Navar, and so he'll kill him, Roel. See that Yosef, you know, God has been with me, God who has been who's a shepherd me this entire time from now until then. Hamalach, Hagol, see me, Kora, Yivarach, Hassanarim, Vikravem, Shemi, Vishema, Vosay, Avis, Yigula, Rova, Kerav, Ares. Right, the famous, Pasuk that we bless children with. We should bless the children. We should bless the RM. Yosef is bothered, right, by the fact that he switched the hands and Lokenavi. But Yoinavi, but no, Yaakov refuses. He says, I know exactly what I'm doing, says Yaakov. Yadati bini Yadati. Gamhu Yalom, Gamhu Yigdal. No, this one will be great. And unlike Esav, who's rejected. Menashe is not going to be rejected. He will also become great, but the younger one is going to be greater than him. And he blesses them, Right, b'chol yivar Yisrael, that in you the Jews will blaspheme more. Yisimcha lokim kefraim chenasha. Right, that God should make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. We know that based upon this pasuk, we have the tradition that the parents bless their boys, that God should make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. And the question is why? Right, why am I not like Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov? Right, parallel to how we bless the girls, Yisimcha lokim kefraim Rachav Alea. Why not like Yosef and Yehuda? Why specifically Ephraim and Manasseh? Okay. So I asked a lot of questions. So I want to just give a possibility how to understand what's happening there. Again, you know, the original question: what exactly is the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef? So here's my thought again, based upon the Netziv's initial suggestion that Yaakov sees within Yosef this very strong spiritual potential. You know, sometimes a parent, you have high hopes for your children, and you believe they're going to go in a certain direction. But at the same time, you're nervous about your children, right? You don't know. You know, life is complex, and it's a big world out there. And in fact, the Netziv, I believe, says this, that. That perhaps Yaakov keeps Yosef close to him because, right, he sees that Yosef is Yifas Toar, right? He's very handsome, good looking. He can get himself into trouble, Yosef. Right? And then he starts sharing these dreams, and the brothers don't like it, and Yaakov himself gets a little upset with Yosef. And so he sees this incredible potential that Yosef has. This inner strength that he has, but also there's a lot of vulnerability and a lot of danger. You know, that people are going to be attracted to Yosef, and Yosef may have a lot of challenges down the road. And in fact, that's what plays out, right? There's all the tension early on with the brothers, and then of course the whole journey in Egypt. And the challenge with the house of Potiphar, and then the wife of Potiphar, and being in prison, and then rising to such prominence in Egypt, he finds himself very far away from his father, and from his family roots, and the connection back home, and how's he going to navigate such an environment? And he's away for such a long period of time. And finally, Yaakov comes down, right? And the Yosef finally reveals himself. The brothers discover him. And Yaakov's not sure what to make of his son, right? He when he encounters his son, he's dressed in royalty. He's married an Egyptian woman, right? The Asnas. And he has these two children that are born from this Egyptian woman. His name has even been changed by Paro. Paro has given him a Tzafnas Paneach, a new name. And Yosef lives separately from the rest of the family, right? That's why there's this back and forth. It doesn't seem like Yaakov and Yosef spend a lot of time together. That Yosef places the family in Goshen, but Yosef remains in the palace. And Yaakov perhaps sees his Yosef's leadership qualities, and he's probably proud of him that he's remained committed. But I think it's very telling that Chazal say that the moment that Yaakov encounters Yosef for the very first time, it's a very strange Chazal. What's Yaakov doing? He's saying Kriya Shema. So like, what do you think he's saying Shema? Like, I remember when I was in Yeshiva in Kerem Yavna, the Mashkiach of Rivlin said, what? Yaakov looked at his watch and said, oh, 2 minutes till Kriya Shema. I better get it in. I'm going to miss another. That's what Yaakov was thinking. Well, why is he saying Shema? What is Chazal driving at? Like, why is he saying Shema when he encounters Yosef? I think the answer is that he wants to see if Yosef still remembers the Shema of his childhood. Right, there's a famous story that is told, told by my great-grandfather, a couple other rabbis, about after the Holocaust, so the children who were placed in convents by their parents, and they went to try to get these kids out of the convents, and they were told, "Oh, there's no Jewish kids here," and the rabbi bursts in, and he says, "Just give me a second." And he cries, screams out, "Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Shem Echad." And that's when a couple of children stand out crying. That's what they remember from their youth, and their parents, saying the Shema. And a similar vein, perhaps, Yaakov, when he sees Yosef, he hasn't seen him in all these years. He's not the same Yosef. He looks very different. I always like telling a story when my younger brother Shalom was a rabbi now in London. I'll never forget when I came back after my first year in yeshiva and in Israel. So when I left, he'd just become bar mitzvah. He was a little short little kid. When I came back, he grew 6 inches and he filled out. I didn't recognize him. He wasn't my little brother anymore. And so when Yaakov sees Yosef, like, who is this person? Right? And perhaps all these last 17 years, he's sort of struggling who he is. And yet, he sees the strength of Yosef. He sees that Yosef has remained committed. And Yosef has two children, Ephraim and Menashe. And as many of the Mephorshim explain, and perhaps what the bracha is that we give our children, they speak Ephraim and Menashe, that you can be in the land of Egypt, which is maybe not the ideal location, but you can remain a committed Jew. Right? You can be in Galus, you can be in the exile, and you can raise your children there, but you can still keep them connected to your roots and to your values and to our Mesorah. But again, the question is, is that going to last every generation? Is every generation going to be successful? And therefore, that's what Yaakov tells Yosef. First, I'll spend a lot of time talking about this in the sixth parasha. Yaakov emphasizes to Yosef, we're not Egyptians. We're Israelis, right? We're Kel Shakai. We're this great nation who's supposed to be in Israel. And therefore, when I die, not only physically do I want to be buried in the land of Israel, but I want to demonstrate to you that I'm rooted in the land of Israel. Shachafti mavosai, I'm going to lay down with my fathers. Not that I'm going to be physically lying next to my fathers, but I'm going to be connected to the Mesorah of my fathers, the tradition. And that's who we are. And it's therefore it's so critical. Don't bury me in Egypt. And again, he has to have Yaakov, promise and said Paro, and Paro will be will abide by it. They said my father made me promise to do it, but I have to be buried in Israel because that's who I am. That's who we are. And what's fascinating, and this is sort of like a culmination of the entire story. And it sees and sort of ends on a happy note. The end of Bereishit ends on a sad note because what's happening. The Jews are about to be enslaved. But what's fascinating is what are the last words out of Yosef at the end of Vayechi? What does he make his brother's promise? So I think this is so powerful. When he makes his brother's promise is the same thing that Yaakov made his son's promise. Just like Yaakov made his son's promise to bury me in Israel, so at the end of the parsha, that's what Yosef as well says to his brother. Yom Yosef Elchav, Anochi Meis, I'm going to die, but God will ultimately remember us. Vayishpa Yosef es Bnei Yisrael Emor, Pakod Yifkod Echim Eschem, Vayisem Es Mosai Mizeh. I also don't want to be buried here. I also want to go back. As Yosef was saying, I get it. I understand what dad was telling me, that I'm not an Egyptian. I'm a Jew. I'm rooted in our tradition. I'm connected to the land of Israel. Right? It's so beautiful. They Yosef, or we're not sure who Yosef is. No, Yosef got the message at the end. But coming back now, just to sort of wrap things together. But when Yaakov encounters the sons of Ephraim and Menashe. So I think what's happening here is that we know, again, he puts the right hand on Ephraim. And the way it's explained, Chazal explains that Ephraim is the spiritual one, right? From Ephraim is going to emerge Yoshua. But Menashe is the more physical one, and what's happening here is that what Yaakov is trying to impress upon Yosef, and maybe he sees within Yosef, he sees that, you know, you don't have to be the Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Olim. You don't have to be the one rooted in the tent, being the shepherd. You can be the farmer. You can be the Menashe, as we spoke about last week. And I'm not going to be Menashe is not Esav. We're not rejecting Esav. We're including both Ephraim and Menashe. You can be an Ephraim. You can be Menashe. You can both be a committed Jew. He puts the right hand on Ephraim because the spiritual pursuits have to come first. They have to be primary. But as Nitziv points out, although the right hand is on Menashe, the right hand is on Ephraim, the right foot is next to Menashe. And Menashe is the strength. Menashe is the one in the working. And they're both important, right? They're both critical. And unlike Esav, again, connecting the earlier story with Esav and Yaakov, Esav was rejected because Esav was not rooted, right? Esav would distance himself. Menashe did not distance himself, right? And this is perhaps what Yitzchak originally intended. We suggested back in Parshas Toldos that there can be a partnership between a Yaakov and Esav. It didn't play itself out in that generation, but it's now going to play itself out in this generation of Yosef, of Yosef's sons, Ephraim and Menashe. And on some level, why is Yosef's sons given this equal status to other tribes? So who's given a double portion? A bechor, right? A firstborn is given a double portion. Why is a firstborn given a double portion? So I forget who says it, but I've seen those who suggested, because the responsibility of the firstborn is to take care of everyone else. Right, so you have to have a double portion. You get extra funds to sort of help out. And so Ephraim and Menashe are going to be the model for everyone else. Right, Ephraim and Menashe are going to be the representation of what Jews can be. Right, that you can be both an Ephraim and Menashe. It could be a healthy balance between between the two. But at the same time, at the end of the day, but Yosef does not emerge as the leader, right? It's Yaakov, it's Yehuda who emerges as leader. In other words, Yaakov sees all these qualities within Yosef. He sees the success of Yosef, but he's also always nervous about Yosef. And he's not so convinced that the Yosef approach is always the most correct approach. And in fact, you know, the Yosef, I think I saw, what does he suggest this? Rabbi Golden, he's the rabbi of many years in Englewood, in his book on Sefer Bereishis, he makes this very beautiful suggestion. He says, "No, Yosef always leads from the outside. Right? Yosef is right again. The family's in Goshen, and Yosef's in the palace. There's a little distance. So you're at the end of the parsha. There's still distance between Yosef and the brothers. There's distance between Yosef and Yaakov." And sometimes you need to have the Jew who's on the outside, the Jew who's in the palace, the Jew who's sort of sacrifices himself on behalf of the rest of the community to sort of go outside what normally considered to be normative, and do things that are critically important for the Jewish people. But the ultimate leader of the Jewish people should not be on the outside, but should be within, should be a part of the people, and that's Yehuda, right? Yehuda is the Orev; he's the one who takes responsibility. That we're all connected to one another, right? He takes responsibility for Binyamin, the notion of Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh LaZeh. So Yehuda ultimately emerges as the leader of the ideal leader of the Jewish people, but the Yosef is this is the type of person that we always need. We always need a Yosef at Tzaddik, right? The person who can sort of step outside the community, but can remain rooted in the community. Right, the one who can have that inner strength to withstand all the temptations that are out there, and not everyone is successful at it. Right, and that's Yosef's, that's Yaakov's hesitation with all of it this whole time. Like Miela, who are these kids? Are your family growing up in the palace of Paro? Are you guys really rooted in our Mesorah? He's never confident, 100% Yaakov within Yosef. But he can't make Yosef the leader. But he sees, you know, the qualities that Yosef has, and ultimately he recognizes the success Yosef has with Ephraim and Manasseh. And perhaps Yaakov, representing the Jew in exile, recognized that every Jew is going to have to mimic the Ephraim and Manasseh. We're not going to be in the idyllic land of Israel, in that cocoon. Right, that's the messianic dream that we should achieve that. But throughout good chunks of our history, we're going to be experiencing life as Yosef and as Ephraim and Manasseh. And the question is, can we imitate that? But for Yaakov, that's not the ideal. And the ideal is the Kel Shakai of being this great nation in the land of Israel. So I think what emerges at the end of the Sefer Bereishit is something very complex. Right, there's a lot of parts here. It's demonstrating to us that the history that's going to unfold for the Jewish people is not going to be smooth. It's going to have its ups and downs, and there's going to be times that we're going to need the Yosef model in order to be successful. But it's a dangerous model, and we should never forget the ideal is the Yehuda, and the ideal is to be buried in the lands. Right, to live in the land, to be rooted within the land of Israel, to be the shepherd, to be the Tam Isho Halim. That's what we strive for, but the path getting there is not going to be simple. And therefore, we have the Yosef HaTzadik model and the example of Ephraim and Manasseh to lead us along that difficult and challenging path. And it's sort of the Book of Bereishit sets the tone for everything that will unfold later on, and so it doesn't leave us with something very simple and something that's clear cut, but it gives us these different paths that will unfold before us that we will need to take in different stages in our lives. It will allow the Jewish people in the immediate sense to deal with what's going to unfold in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, and the Sheba, and the slavery. And ultimately, it's going to allow us to have a path throughout the course of Jewish history until this time and moving forward until the time of Mashiach. And it's very beautiful, I think, that, Friday night, when we bless our children, that, we say, wherever life takes you, and again, it could be that your children won't necessarily go on the path that you want them to achieve, and you have the highest hopes and dreams for them, but you give them the bracha, you show them the way. The beautiful thing about Ephraim and Asha is that they'll surprise you. Hopefully, it'll all come together. It's the Yosef that perhaps Yaakov is most nervous about. Yosef ultimately gives them the greatest nachas. To Yosef, who rises to such prominence and saves the family, and not to give up on your children, even when you're a little bit questioning who they are, you constantly you give them the reminders. You say the Shema Yisrael to them, even when they're older. You keep them informed and reminded of we're rooted in our Mesorah in the land of Israel, and Mirat Hashem, Parents, grandparents will have much nachas from their children and grandchildren. But I think at the end of Sefer Bereishit, the thing that Yaakov ultimately has, he's able to rest in peace. Right? Although there's going to be a rocky future ahead, the family is connected, they're united, and Yaakov is zocha to not only to have children, but to have grandchildren who are following in his path. All right, wishing everyone a very meaningful Shabbos.